Love where you live.
We have a guest in the studio. We have the lovely Em Birch. Welcome, Em.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here. We're going to start with a listener question. This will all make sense as we go on. So the question was, are pets good for mental health? Now, as a person with two little dogs, I would say yes, definitely they're good for mental health. But I'm going to pass on to the expert in the room. Em, are pets good for mental health?
In short, yes. In long, also yes. But potentially, it has to be right and it has to be matched. If you, let's say, don't like going outside, or you're quite an anxious person and you get yourself a very full-on, very lively, quite noisy, slightly tricksy dog, that might increase your anxiety, let's say. However, if you match it correctly, you can be off and you'll be absolutely well on your way and it'll be perfect. So overall, I would say absolutely yes,
yeah.
But it needs to be matched, and I think this is where it can sometimes go wrong. Dogs are man's best friend, but sometimes they can be a real pain.
How would you know how to match it?
So, being clever, if you're going out and getting a puppy, being clever about what you're choosing and what you're picking, reputable breeders, all that sort of thing, so
yep.
Making sure that they're well matched, you meet the parents, and also matching for your kind of, so for your size as well, and so... Oh, my Nana, when she was only 4'5", she was absolutely miniature. And she loved dogs, absolutely loved them. And when she was old and on her own, she really wanted a dog to get her out meeting people,
yeah.
All the reasons that you get a dog. She got a rescue, and they sent her home with an 11-month-old big bearded collie that within 2 days had taken off her feet, I think, several times.
No.
And so she had to give it back. And that knocked her confidence so much, she actually then never got a dog. So yeah, badly matched,
yeah.
Can be a recipe for disaster. Well matched, and I think as well, I'm a big advocate for rescue dogs, and that's where you can really match personalities really nicely.
Yeah. I mean, what a shame that the place that she went to didn't see the woman stood in front of them and sent her home with a dog that size.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's where you can get loads of damage done. But actually, the short answer, yes, pets are great for mental health. The long answer is it needs to be. It's not as simplistic, I think.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your background.
So I have always loved animals. As long as I can remember, I've always loved animals. My first ever interaction my first ever kind of the moment where I suppose something inside me woke up and I realised that I loved animals was when I was quite young. I would have been 3 or 4. And I was sitting in the garden with my dad and we were feeding the hedgehogs. And we used to put out some cat food and then we would just stand and wait for them. And out came a mummy hedgehog with her two little babies.
Aww.
In hot pursuit. And the mummy hedgehog started eating some cat food and the two little babies sniffed up my trouser leg. And then one ran off and one started eating food. And I remember so clearly that was the moment that in my head, something turned on and I realised I absolutely loved animals.
Aww.
And this for me was kind of my calling. I did a very general undergraduate degree. So I did animal behaviour and welfare. And then after finishing that, I looked at two courses and whether I looked more at wildlife or pets, and I went on the pets route. So I did my master's in clinical animal behaviour. And that's kind of where I am now. But I've always loved dogs. I'm definitely more of a dog person than a cat person, if we're going to kind of stereotype, although I do like both. And we got our first dog.
You so sounded like you were being fair then. But I like both.
Yeah, I don't want to put the cat people off. They have their merits.
Yes. They're independent.
They are. They and you know, and I quite like that in a sense about a cat. If you ask a dog to come in, they're like, yeah, sure, but cats are like, no, not just yet. You stand with that door open for a bit longer. And I quite like that. I think cats teach you a lot more patience than dogs do.
Yeah.
Because you can't make a cat do something.
No, dogs are very loyal.
Yeah. And then we got our first dog, probably for not mental health reasons, but more of a protective factor, I suppose. So when I was 13, my dad died. And I'd always wanted a dog, and whether or not he was truly allergic, I shall never know, whether that was just a facade they hid behind. Who knows? But I asked my mum if we could get a dog, and she said yes. And along came Evie, who went to rescue centre. There she was absolutely perfect, and she was always perfect in every way. She was unbelievably naughty. She was the naughtiest dog I've ever met, but that made her perfect, to be fair. And that's kind of, I owe a lot to that dog.
Yeah.
A real lot to that dog. She got me through some really hard times. And actually, as a family, we went from being quite separate, having just lost our dad and our mum's husband, obviously, in came this creature who didn't care about any rules and absolutely hit the road running.
She's still around?
No, so she, aww, we lost Evie 3 years ago.
Oh.
3 years ago, yeah, 2.5. So yeah, that was very sad. But actually, I think I grieved for the potential loss of her far more than when she actually went, ironically. I think I was more frightened of saying goodbye to her than the actual one I said goodbye.
Yeah.
It was much easier to manage, I think, in my own head than I thought it would be.
Yeah. People underestimate the power of animal grief.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I remember working with somebody and she came in and seen me and she went, I feel so stupid. But it completely floored me. I went, why are you struggling to accept this grief?
Yeah.
That dog followed you everywhere, yeah, was at your side at all points.
Yeah.
And she really, and with an hour of kind of sitting together and talking about it, she felt better and went, okay, I've got it. I know with my little dog, she's 11 now, and I think it was last year she got diagnosed with a kidney disease, and immediately I was like, oh no, this can't happen. Then the vet went, it's okay, she's got kidney disease, we'll treat her and she'll be fine. I was like, oh, okay, but there was this moment, yeah, of, oh my God, she's dying.
Yeah. We all panic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Complete panic. But people do underestimate it.
They do massively. And I've always been lucky in that where I worked, so I used to teach in animal related subjects. So obviously I was in an office full of animal people. So if someone's dog did die, we, yeah, all totally got it. But yeah, and I can't imagine not being in that environment. Yeah, well, they are members of the family.
Yeah.
And in fact, more so, because I think, not more so, but dogs teach you and all your pets. You confide in them and they see sides of you that I think you wouldn't ever show to other,
yeah,
people. And it's funny, I have a really close bond. So with Evie, I had a really close bond. Then, as a parent, we've got another dog, Peggy, who's totally bonkers. So Peggy is just a bit wild, very wild. And then I've got Zipper and Juno. And I have I love them both dearly. So they're my dog, Zipper and Juno. But Zipper has been through some really hard times with me. He's now 8. So he's seen me from university to graduating to another degree to... He's seen me through a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And through quite intense periods of loneliness. It's been him that's kind of got me through, and I have a very different relationship with him. Like, I suppose in my head I do than I do my younger dog.
Yeah.
Who has just... I mean, I'm just... I suppose it's like I've never been through a hard time, thankfully.
Yeah.
Where I've needed her kind of shoulder, hairy, yeah, shoulder to cry on, and like I have with him.
If somebody was considering getting a pet, I won't say dog.
Yeah. It's going to be very dog-centric, this.
A pet, yeah, for company, mental health reasons. You said earlier the match is really important. Where would somebody access that kind of advice or guidance?
So the Kennel Club actually has got a really nice choose your breed kind of questionnaire, and it that'll look at your energy levels, how much you walk, your space, will molting be a problem, long head, short head, how much grooming can you put in. So it asks, yeah, all the really practical questions.
Perfect.
Which then matches it, and that's a really neat little tool, and that's totally free. That's just the Kennel Club's website. And then if you go to a rescue centre, you want to go to one, and just, I would, for me, going to a rescue centre, it'd be about, do they match you to a dog, or is it kind of, oh, that one looks cute and I want to take that one home?
Yeah.
And actually, I would be looking, so, and I've come across a lot of rescue centres in the work that I do, some of which are absolutely brilliant, and the work they do is second to none, it's incredible. Yeah. I've got a friend, actually, who fosters and rehomes, and she annoys a lot of people, or offends a lot of people, because they'll come wanting X, Y, or Z dog, and she'll say, I'm really sorry. It's just not going to work. And actually, or is it a kind of rescue who, yeah, off you go, because actually they don't care if they get the dog back, because,
yeah,
they can then send it off again. And I think for me it's looking, just go with your gut. I always, yeah, think go with your gut feeling. If the rescue centre is really passionate about their dogs, I think you're in safe hands.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned something off air, some new studies.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
So it's looking, so the route now is looking at kind of how protective are pets for mental health. So half of it is, obviously we have a big thing of when we have mental health concerns and mental health issues, we need to do something about them and we need to help. But actually, it would be much better if children particularly didn't end up in this kind of situation. And I don't know what the statistics are now, but I know that mental health is on a massive rise with children. And I find that really quite scary. And I kind of have this. I'm a bit of a, I don't know, maybe call me a hippie or whatever, but I kind of think that being outside and fresh air and getting away from technology and getting away from... We're never allowed to switch off in modern life.
Yep.
I think that's really important. And I think that's what children are lacking. They have Facebook, they have all these things. So everything is just a comparison. Whereas actually, childhood for me, I think, should be that image of actually you're outside getting dirty, messy. And for me, that's always been with animals too.
Yeah.
But so this is kind of, and this notion has been looked at much more. So looking at how much do pets help kind of building that resilience. So it's protective against mental health.
Yeah.
And they found that owning a pet, irrespective of whether it's dogs, cats, rabbits, horses, and we'll come on to horses actually in a minute, but irrespective of the pet, it teaches children, well, they have a much greater sense of autonomy, so they understand that they are their own person.
Yeah.
Much higher levels of emotional resilience, and much more self-awareness, and all of those are really protective.
Wow.
For not kind of developing depression and anxiety.
That's amazing.
Later on in life. So yeah, and they haven't perfectly kind of extrapolated what factor it is, because there's loads. It's the social cohesion, it's the physical effects of, the, you know, stroking a dog lowers your heart rate, blood pressure, all those sorts of things. Or actually, is it the fact that with a dog, you have to get up and you have to do stuff and you have to be out and about? And with a cat, you have to feed them and you have to look after them. And I suppose as well, for me, it's about if you're rude or you're mean to an animal, they won't want to hang around with you. Whereas actually, if you're kind and you're patient and you're calm, they will, and you'll then start getting your best friend. And I think that's teaching children respect around pets is really important. But I think that's kind of where it might really help. And I think it's really helpful for when you look at the horses as well. So horses being prey animals, if you're really flighty and jumpy around them, you will totally instigate that in the horse. If you're quite calm, and actually that's where lots of the work with kind of autism and children with horses has come from, is looking at that. But yeah, emotional resilience is a massive factor, and horses seem to be really protective against that, or teaching that, sorry.
What do you know about equine therapy?
So little bits. I used to part share a horse, never owned a horse, but I used to work at a yard. I sit on the fence with horses, so as in, I really love horses as animals. I think they're incredible. I don't know how I always feel about riding them.
Yeah.
I kind of think, because we can, should we? And of the behaviour case I see that are horses, it's nearly always pain.
Yeah.
It's nearly always pain. They're prey species as well, so they'll hide it. But some of the work that, so I really like the hand, the like children on foot, caring for horses, that sort of therapy, I think is really nice. But that said, I've got family in Switzerland who, they had a very disabled little daughter, who very sadly is no longer here. But they, one of the programs in Switzerland is that you can ride a horse with your child. And actually, ironically, well, not ironically, so this little, so my friend's daughter couldn't ever sit up on her own. But if you put her on a horse and got the horse moving, something about the movement gave her back strength.
Wow.
So she'd end up being able to sit up with support to an extent, but weight, like really strong.
Yeah.
And I found that was really quite incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that kind of human-animal bond. Actually, we also talk about, she's called Katrina, and I remember the first, they were telling me they used to have a little dog called Jasper as well, and Katrina could kick her legs. That was all she could do herself, was kick her legs. And they went to visit a friend who happened to have a litter of Jack Russell puppies, and out of the blue, I can think Katrina would have been about 5 or 6, she just put her arms out, and this puppy, no word of a lie, jumped on her lap, and then he stayed. And he stayed, like, he never got off her knee, basically. They were totally inseparable. And he just understood, he totally got that she had physical disabilities. And he was unbelievable. And when he outlived her, when she died, he actually, as a dog, I would say, probably developed depression.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to go out, he didn't want to leave her room. And over time, he got better. He would have been grieving, I think, to an extent.
Yeah.
But yeah, he got better. But that's another little factor that probably pushed me much more down the animal route than the wildlife route when I chose it. So yeah.
I was remember my had a Bichon and a Labradoodle. The Labradoodle got very sick. She had some sort of, we think it was liver disease. And she was taken to the vets, and she passed. We had to put her down in the end. And then the Bichon, who was pregnant at the time, got really, really sad. And I remember going to the vets and taking her to the vets and saying to the vets, what's wrong with her? What's wrong? She won't eat. She's carrying pups. And the vet just went, she's depressed.
Yeah.
She's grieving for her sister that she never got a chance to say goodbye to. And they were really close. And I was like, oh, mate. And she just was so sad. She, again, like your dog, she got over it and she got brighter and brighter. But when the vet said, no, she's depressed, I was like, wow, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, this was years ago, but yeah, she really was quite sad. And we just had to be there for her.
Yeah. And there's a little bit to say that actually letting existing pets see your dog after they've died is actually quite, because they understand, like, the concept of death is probably, for them, is quite, we wonder what dogs understand and what cats understand and what they don't, but I think we'd be crazy to not think they understand what death is.
Yeah.
And given their sense of smell, I think, actually, and I, when we had our old dog put down, Evie, we were at home. I'm very lucky that my brother's a vet, so he put our dog to sleep. But we let all the other dogs in, and actually all of them sniffed her and went really quiet, just lay. One of them lay right next to her. My youngster, who's quite nervous, became very nervous. I think she thought that we were going to pick them all off one by one, so she had to leave the room.
Yeah.
But the others were very, like, definitely did understand. And they never looked for her. It was like they never... I know people who've had dogs who've taken their old dog to the vet, had her put to sleep, come home, and they've been searching. Their resident dog's been searching. And I never had any of that.
Yeah.
That's purely anecdotal.
I think we underestimate the intelligence of dogs.
Yeah.
And what they get and what they don't get.
Yeah.
And how good they are for mental health.
Yeah.
How calming they can be. And just, I've got a couple of clients that I've said, I've looked at and went, you know what you need?
Yeah.
And you just, and I'll say, you need a dog. And they're like, no, I'm not getting a dog. And I'm like, I just think it would give a sense of responsibility in your world. There's something really powerful. One of the reasons that one has given me for not wanting a dog is because they have said, I can't have that kind of responsibility. And I'm like, no, I couldn't do it. I couldn't look after it. I'm like, yeah, you can.
Yeah.
You just can. And I know that you can. And I know you have that ability. It's just a fear. It's just a fear. But I'm convinced that after a period of trauma and discomfort whilst they're training the dog and trying to get they would absolutely, that dog would help them thrive. Absolutely thrive. Even if it's in terms of going out and walking.
Well, and that's a massive. So not only the physical of going out and walking is a huge kind of a factor for mental health, but also dogs are really good facilitators of social cohesion.
Yeah.
So they get you out and they get you talking to other dog owners.
Yeah.
And actually, I can't really go on a walk. Sometimes I kind of want to go on a walk and just have some headspace just for me. And I will always bump into people.
Yeah.
And you end up having a conversation and chatting to them. And actually, and that's kind of, so dogs are, so there was a really neat study that actually said how good dogs are for the economy because they increase social cohesion, which makes you feel more part of society, which then makes you go out and spend more money. So yeah, we should really encourage everyone to get dogs. But yeah, they're massively, massively important and helpful. And there's some neat studies as well about dogs in offices and dogs in the workplace.
Yeah.
So one of the lines of my work is that I look at actually getting dogs into offices, but doing it properly, because if it's just a, so this is where I say pets are great for mental health, but don't poorly.
Yeah.
They can be an absolute catalyst.
Yeah.
It could be a really bad scenario. But because if you allow owners to take pets into the workplace, it increases productivity and lowers anxiety, stress, depression, all of those things, and increases emotional resilience and everything like that. So,
But I wonder whether employers would immediately think we're not having a dog in the office because people are spend loads of time petting the dog.
Yeah, yeah.
But I would say, well, maybe they will spend some time petting the dog, but then they'll just go back to the desk and be clear-headed, and then their productivity and their ability to produce would go up.
Yeah, and actually, when you look at, so models of kind of reducing down the work week from 5 to 4 days, productivity doesn't change.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big, I mean, I think the whole, someone picked out that we should work 40 hours a week, and that's what we are made to do, kind of culturally and society based. But I think actually, yeah, you allow a dog into the office and it's proven time and time again that actually increases productivity.
Yeah.
And also there's probably a factor as well, that because you allowed your dog in the office, you kind of are a bit more, kind of, you think a bit more highly of where you're working, or you can't, and you want to do a bit better.
More value there.
That's it. Yeah.
There's just more value there. I deliver health and wellbeing into business, and for a small amount of money, and it really isn't a large amount of money, the employee feels worthy because their employers go in, no, you are worth this. Go and sit and do a session with this guy, and because you're worthy of that. Yeah. And that increases, again, productivity.
Yeah.
So it's brilliant. Do you enjoy your work?
I do. So since I've been self-employed, I really like it. Yeah. I really like it. I became a mum quite recently, which is the most amazing job in the world. Not job, but the most amazing thing in the world. So actually going self-employed means I work less hours.
Yeah.
But you earn not far off what I was kind of earning before.
Yeah.
And you're your own boss, so I think you can plan and pick your hours. So yeah, so for me, it works really well. I like it.
Not so much a job, but it is definitely a role.
Yeah.
Being a mum.
Yeah.
So how do you... So, mum... There is a dog in the house, isn't there?
Two dogs in the house.
Yeah. How do you... Because, again, a lot of people listening would be like, I'm not sure about dogs, the children, and what would be... If you were going to sell that to somebody, what would be the benefit?
So the benefit is my daughter's learning to grow up around dogs. So the cost of it being is, so it used to be me and my dogs, and we went everywhere together.
Yeah.
They came everywhere with me, pretty much. We did loads of stuff together, and their lives have changed big time. And I have to, one of the really massive things about dogs and children, so children under the age of 4 are huge, are the biggest bite risk from dogs.
Right.
Very amazing study by a lady called Carrie Westgarth up at Liverpool University looked at this further. So she showed under 4 years old pictures of dogs snarling, and over the age of 4 pictures of dogs snarling. Under the age of 4, all of those children said that dog was smiling and that they would approach it. Over the age of 4,
wow.
Children, something innate, I think, clicks in and they go, no, I don't, that's a happy dog, yeah. I wouldn't touch it. And that's, not only is it the physical size, a 4-year-old is a dog's face height, but it's also that they do not understand signals that dogs are giving off at all. For me, as a parent, it's totally my responsibility to ensure my dog's welfare and my daughter's welfare.
Yeah.
That means my dogs have more time shut away. So, and by shut away, they'll just be behind a stair gate in the living room.
Yeah.
So basically making sure they have their own space.
Yeah.
So again, I think it's totally doable, but I think we need to be realistic.
Yeah.
My daughter's she's 13 months old, and she's really grabby, and she loves the dog. She absolutely loves them. And sod's law, she loves the one who isn't as keen on her. One of my so Zipper, the boy dog, loves her and just wants to be in her face all the time. The other one would rather just keep out of the way. She's just a quieter dog. She just likes her own space. And sod's law, she likes Juno more. So they do get shut away, but that said, I'm home so much more. So actually, you have the time from a home perspective. And actually, if you get, my dogs had 6-7 years before a child came along.
Yeah.
So for them, it's a big upheaval. If you've got a puppy or a really young dog,
yeah.
I've got a friend who massively advises getting puppies and babies at the same time.
Yeah.
And
I can see that.
Fine. Yeah, because you're up, you're home all the time.
Yeah.
You're in and about. And I've got friends actually who I've made who've got children the same age as mine, and they got a puppy, and it's perfect. The puppy and the child's relationship's wonderful.
Yeah.
Really nice. But it's about teaching those safe interactions, and that's potentially where, as well, it kind of starts to create a bit of autonomy in children, and kind of increased resilience and self-esteem and all those sorts of things. And responsibility.
We were talking earlier about the just to clarify, this was my comparison, one that doesn't go down very well sometimes, with the comparison between training dogs and training children. And for me, I see an absolute comparison there. It's almost the same. It's about consistency. Mm-hmm. Same message. Yeah. Just keep going back with it. And eventually it kind of penetrates and it goes in. When I do that with parents, sometimes they don't like it, but there's just so much comparison.
Yeah.
But between training those kind of two areas there.
And you've hit the nail on the head. So consistency is the biggest factor in welfare of anybody, a person or a dog or an animal. Well, we are also animals, this is the thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, being consistent. And actually, there's some really nice studies that have looked at stress levels in dogs of owners who are very punitive and owners who are very nice, and the stress levels are no different. Because actually, if you know how to control your environment, so it's predictable.
Yeah.
You're not stressed.
Yeah.
An oven, you can walk into a kitchen and an oven can cause you the most horrendous burns and could really hurt you, but you're not scared of it.
No.
You know entirely how to control the situation. Yeah. And actually, if you just, I'm not remotely condoning that you're punitive, by the way, but if you're consistent, actually, dogs are pretty happy. And that is totally true as well with children. And kind of, yeah, just consistently. So, and we do it at the moment, so we're doing a lot of just gentle hands, so hands can't pinch and shut on dog's fur, wouldn't that's nice to grab. So just do a lot of open hand stroke.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's kind of how they learn.
Yeah.
But yeah, there are lots of parallels, lots of them. And interestingly, lots of the human stuff is looking at kind of intrinsic reinforcement, whereas with dogs, so internal. So you do something because it makes you feel good, and might because you've helped somebody else, and you more like to do it again, as opposed to you get paid a fiver. And I would be really interested to look at that a bit more with dogs, because at the moment we train them entirely through external reinforcements.
So like a treat.
So give them a reward for doing something good. But actually, and I wonder how can dogs be intrinsically reinforced? We don't know. And that's something that would be really interesting to look at. Does a dog ever do something just because it feels... Well, of course they do stuff just because it feels good, but can you use that for your own... So, for example, you can teach children to help at dinner time, say, because they see how much it helps you and it makes you all feel good. So, actually, they're more likely to do it in the future, as opposed to if you help them pay you a fiver. Because then the money just has to go up, and then when you ask them for help, they'll ask what they get in return. But actually, whereas with dogs, we always just pay. And I suppose we know that random rates of reinforcement is the technical term for it, but that basically just means it's random. They don't know when they're going to get a reinforcement. Yeah. Is a really neat way of training a dog. So my dogs are really great on recall. They don't always get a reward. Sometimes they'll get an amazing reward, sometimes they'll get a medium level reward. It totally is random. So they work really hard all the time to do it, because they don't know whether this is the time they'll get a massive game, or this is the time they'll get a piece of liver, or this is the time they'll get nothing. So it keeps them working. So my gambling is addictive, because we will keep on working for that random reward. We don't know when it's going to happen.
So with a human, we would... If you were looking for validation or reward, if I said to somebody, that's really good, you should be really proud of what you've done there. But a dog... So I know with my dogs, I would... The little one struggles to jump onto the bed because it's quite a high bed. So when she does, I'm like, good girl, that's brilliant, really good. And I don't necessarily try not to touch her, but I don't always stroke her in line with that. I'll just go, that was really good. Would she get that? Would she get the tone of my voice?
And this is what we don't really know. I would say verbal is a reinforcement. So yes, they would find that reinforcing and they would like it. But actually, does she then feel like, yeah, I did it? Yeah. And then actually she then feels really like, so she becomes
empowered.
Self-confident. Yeah, empowered by it. I don't think we know.
Because with the bed, she'll approach the bed, and if it's interesting, because if I'm behind her, so if I walk upstairs behind, they're spending far too much time on this bed, by the way.
It's fine.
Then she'll stand at the bed and wait to be picked up. If I'm in the bed and I say, come on, up you get, then she'll do it. And she might, it might take a couple of times, but if she does it, sometimes you can almost see it in her head, she'll do it. She'll get to the end of the bed and fall off. And she's like, oh, goodness, really? And then she's really slow to try it again.
Yeah.
I have to really, really encourage her.
Yeah.
So you can see her confidence being knocked.
Yeah,
she just looks at me and says, please pick me up.
Yeah.
Come on, you know it's easier. And I'm like, no.
You can do it.
Get your back legs up there. Come on, you can do this. You're 11 years old. We're keeping your fitness up there. But it's all about encouragement.
And someone, talking of dogs on beds, I'm a total pro for advocate for dogs on beds. Someone once said, and I think these are the wisest words, it's 8 hours of quality time you can spend with your dog that you otherwise wouldn't. Obviously, safety first. If you have some horrendous allergies or something, probably don't sit right next to them. Or if kind of, I don't think if you've got children in the bed, that should probably not be, I'd be quite wary there. But yeah, I think if it's just, and it works,
yeah,
have your dogs in the bed, I'm totally pro it.
Talking about allergies and dogs, just really briefly, I have allergies to almost everything, sometimes I think. And my two dogs are, I've got a Schnauzer and a Bichon, and both of them are completely non-molten, and I get no effect from them whatsoever. They can both sit on my chest, so close to my nose, and there is nothing whatsoever. So don't use allergies as a reason not to get pets. There are non-molten. I'm not sure there's...
So there is with cats.
There's a sphinx.
Yeah, the hairless one.
The hairless one.
Yeah, but I mean, debatable. I don't know how much satisfaction I get from stroking that. I'm probably going to offend some Sphinx owners now. They have hairless dogs too, Mexican hairless.
Right, okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, no.
Or you can just go for non-molting, like a Schnauzer or a Bichon.
And cats are a bit tricky, so you can't get non-molting cats. But there is a breed, there are breeds of cats that are low hypoallergenic.
Right, okay.
Where they have, so the dander in their fur, which is what we react to,
yeah,
is lower.
Right.
And having said that, my sister-in-law's got one of these.
Yeah.
Low hypoallergenic cats, and to be fair, her other half is like so allergic to cats, if he walks in the room, his face will explode with allergies. He is fine.
Yeah,
he's absolutely fine with his cat, so it does seem to work.
It does work. Do you have any lasting pieces of guidance or advice for people listening with regards to pets and mental health? You're definitely an advocate for it.
I'm definitely an advocate for it. I think pets are amazing for mental health, particularly it seems to be the younger that you get involved, pets involved within your children's kind of lifestyle, the better. That's not to say if you are older and you're feeling a bit lonely, definitely there will be a dog out there who would match you perfectly.
Yeah.
And I think as long as it's done correctly,
yeah,
it's amazing. And I think the kind of benefits, and I always will believe that the benefits on offer far outweigh the costs of getting to that point.
Oh, absolutely.
It's hard work training a puppy.
Yeah.
But the benefits of having an amazing old adult dog are incredible.
Yeah.
You can't beat them.
So you're definitely an advocate for rescue dogs, which I love. And the other piece of advice there to pick up on that you said earlier as well was the match. The match is really important. And I kind of agree with that. It just is.
And my biggest kind of soundbite that I always tell everybody who I ever see, so I probably should add it in here, is listen to the whispers. Someone very wise once told me that. If you listen to the whispers, they don't need to shout. Educate yourself on subtle signs, so things like your dog licking their lips, yawning, doing a little body shake as if they're wet, lifting a paw up, all of that says that they're not very comfortable.
Yeah.
And if you listen to those really subtle signs, they don't ever have to escalate.
I
mentioned that my younger dog isn't all that keen on my daughter. She'll just do things like, after kind of my daughter's chased her around a bit, or tried to chase her around, I don't actually let her, but if she's been sleeping somewhere, my daughter's gone up to her, she will get up and walk off, but I will nearly always get a yawn.
Yeah.
That is a yawn to say I was not very comfortable. That's
That's
all she has to do, and I know that she's not comfortable. So
but you kind of, with the yawn, you have to know that, don't you?
Yes, yeah.
And what I would say to anybody that owns a dog is, why do you not know that?
Yeah.
If you're going to own a dog, then know what the signs are. Yeah. Be that responsible dog owner. There's so many people with dogs or pets, and they just get them and then wonder why there's so much work, because they need looking after. They're living and breathing things, so to look after them.
And they'll say their dog will have given subtle signs for sometimes years. Alzheimer's have a dog, and in fact, I had a dog recently. Well, not recently, a few years ago that I saw on a behaviour basis, and he'd eventually bitten, I think, a visitor. This dog was in quite serious amounts of pain. Bilateral hip dysplasia, he ended up getting diagnosed. I don't diagnose, but his vet diagnosed him with bilateral hip dysplasia, which means in both hips, and it's very painful. He had spondylosis in his spine, and he also had luxated patellas.
Yeah.
So this little dog was sore for 8 years. And when I met this dog, I instantly, everything about him said, please don't touch me.
Yeah.
And the way that he moved everything about him, and he said very politely, I don't want to be touched.
Yeah.
For 8 years, that had been ignored for 8 years. And you think a dog, let's say, I mean, the breed probably lives to 10, so he spent 80% of his life subtly saying, please don't touch me, I'm sore. And eventually he went, you know what, you'll listen to this. And he sunk his teeth in.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, it worked. So that's where they go to next time. But if they listened to the whispers, they would have
not
to be bitten and could have helped him much, much sooner.
I love that. Listen to the whispers. If people want to make contact with you, where would they find your contact details?
So I have a website, canineconsultancy.org.
Cool.
And I have a Facebook page, which is just Emily Birch, Canine Consultancy.
Fantastic. Emily, thank you so much for coming in today and giving us your time to share the links between animals and animalcy and mental health. It's been brilliant. If you have any questions, then you have Em's contact details there. You can contact me at Guthrie Therapy's Facebook page. Remember, these podcasts are for you. Remember that we record them for mental health and well-being. We're trying to create a bridge between what mental health used to be and what we would like it to be. And what we would like it to be is more accessible, more understandable, so as less people suffer with mental health. The truth is, we all have a level of mental health, and it's about managing it, understanding it. It's a little bit like owning a dog. Don't just own a dog and expect that you're going to get it. We all have mental health. Do a little bit of education. By listening to these, you are educating yourself. You can contact the studio on 01636 678033. You can email us at studio@radionewark.co.uk. As I always say, please, please look after yourself. Be very kind to yourself. Until the next time, take care. Bye-bye. Radio.